support of 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
The Unruffled Beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals Thursday, 10 p.m., a time for So What's Your Story? Always live and the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. Right here on listener-sponsored 90.1 KPFT Houston. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, Professor of Communication at the University of Houston Downtown, along with the essential team player, Jacob Reiner, working the boards. Look, I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that I haven't enjoyed time away, but I got to tell you, I am really missing this place. After doing it every week for years, doing it once a month feels like once a year. And I am so fortunate to have talented hosts like Greg and Warren and Laura help to bring you the power of story. We are the best team around. You know, they say that from the instant he lays eyes on her, a father adores his daughter. Whoever she grows up to be, she's always to him that little girl in pigtails. She makes him feel like Christmas. In exchange, he makes a secret promise not to see the awkwardness of her teenage years, the mistakes she makes, and the secrets she keeps. If stories reveal more than they conceal, then the secret held by any storyteller, including those held by a loving daughter, is soon discovered by listeners fortunate enough to be astonished by the revelations they hear. Like events so powerful that they influence an indefinable spiritual connection between a father and his daughter. Like the connection my guest teller will convey tonight. Dallas native Kay Moon Winters was raised in a politically charged home by her Cherokee father and Lucille Ball look-alike mother. Lucy! Right. At 12, she accompanied her labor leader dad on a trip to D.C., an episode that transformed her. She met the soon-to-be President John F. Kennedy when he was a senator, who told young Kay, get as much education as you can. Be like your father. Thinking her father might be able to arrange another meeting with then-President Kennedy, she suffered instead a debilitating trauma as a result of his assassination. Kay was trailed by an unexpected path when she canceled her plans to attend college in order to marry her high school sweetheart, keeping him out of Vietnam, and ultimately feeling like she disappointed both her father and the fallen president. But she made good, getting her degree 40 years later, raising two sons and a daughter, and she's done good by getting involved with the American Cancer Society and by building businesses that capitalize on her love for children and poetry, starting with Balloonatune and then Moon Dreams. Kay remembered the words of the president, so she started school at San Jack as a young 50-something and then at the U of H, where she was awarded the International Education Fund Scholarship to attend Charles University in Prague, Czech Republic, and winning the Alan Levy Award for Best Essay by an Undergraduate, Prague Summer Program 2006. A late-to-bloom liberal. Can't believe it's late, with given the home you were raised in, Kay. But she was 55 when she saw her first anti-war poem, The Truth As I See It, published in Poets Against the War. At 60, Kay graduated summa cum laude, poetry, speaking gigs, and one of our newest members in the Houston Storytellers Guild, Kay Moon Winters. I know that's a lot, but I'll tell you, storytellers have a hell of a pedigree, and so do you. I'm so glad that you're here, finally, right?
Thank you, Hank.
Oh, you are welcome. Listen, pleasure. Talk to us about Moon Dreams.
Moon Dreams was born when my firstborn discovered a box filled with 35 years of poetry. She read every poem, some she probably shouldn't have.
Well, where did she find them?
In the closet, hidden.
She just decided to walk into your closet.
Yes,
and
as
see
children
what mom's
do.
Got.
They okay, dig through good. Your, even when they become mothers themselves. Mm-hmm. And she came back the next day with swollen eyes and said, "Get up, Mom, we're going into business." Her brothers and husband and unborn children went along with us, and for 10 years we sold my poetry as framed art and prayer boxes in the finest gift shops across America.
That is so beautiful. That is so beautiful. And, you know, we're not talking about poetry with this simple. We're not talking about, you know, Skinny and Fatty went to bed when Fatty rolled over, Skinny was dead. Yeah. We're talking about good stuff, right?
We're talking about some pretty heartfelt, deep stuff. Yeah.
And I wanted our listeners to know that we're talking about things that were so poignant that they were very difficult for you to share for some time. And your daughter uncovered it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Now, you've got some stories tonight that is really about your dad. Your father is such a key character in tonight's narratives, Kay. To give us a sense of your dad, give us three adjectives, three descriptors that best tell us who your dad is, your labor leader dad.
Hard.
Hard.
Strong. And compassionate.
Hard, strong, and compassionate.
Yes.
Sometimes we think about those three and we think that they're contradictory, but they're not.
No.
And I know your stories and you're about to prove it. Now, your first story, November 2nd, 1963. 1963, how can I forget that date, is a date that resonates with almost everyone. And it's a date that rings fervently for you in particular.
Yes.
Tell us your story.
On November 22nd, 1963, most anyone alive at the time can tell you where they were, save for me. Oh, I know I was in Dallas, the city of my birth, and in the state of Texas and on the planet Earth, but where I was when shots rang out on that fateful day is a conundrum I still ponder, and a truth I cannot say. All I know for certain, the singular thing I recall, was the world was now diminished and shrouded in a pall. Up till then, I had been a typical teen of the times, looking for the reasons and listening for the rhymes, in bobby socks and loafers and hair and bouffant flip, though hardly square, I'd hardly dare proclaim myself as hip. What I was a liberal. An idealist, that was me, but then what choice did I have raised at my father's knee? He was the quintessential Texan, tall in his Stetson hat, who instilled in me equality for all, and that was that. I'd grown up in a home that was built on democracy, a happy place where any race felt comfortable to be. At 3 years old, I sat upon my father's shoulders strong, passing flyers to the crowds, politicking all day long. I hardly took much notice when I came home from school of the likes of Barbara Jordan or Jim Wright or Senator Mike McCool or LBJ or Henry B. or Ralph or any other, though sometimes I'd listen to them laughing with my mother. The one I do remember, though, up until that fateful day, was the one I met in Washington. We called him JFK. At 12 years old, I stood in awe as he held my hand and felt at once the power he held at his command. His smile conveyed sincerity, and through a child's pure eye, I looked into his soul and knew all the reasons why my father worked so hard for him, as well so many others, and how at last we truly could be sisters and brothers. Fast forward to the future. I am sweet 16, the apple of my father's eye, a budding teenage queen, certain of my future as well my destiny. On November 22nd, 1963, I awakened to a morning electricity fill the air. They'd let us all skip school that day. The teachers didn't care. Mom and Dad had long been gone to places the president would be, and if at all possible, Daddy promised me that he would call and let me know if I could meet him just one more time. And here's the part where I lost the reason to the rhyme. Where I went from that point on, I simply cannot tell. Nor will I let myself believe what I perceived was hell. From awakening that morning, the next thing that I knew was driving up to my home, as my brother and parents did too. A surreal scene then followed. My father, so straight and strong, was doubled up in agony as my mother helped him along. Inside the house, a phone, it rang, reporters, supporters, and friends. But here is where my story of Camelot now ends. On a day I can't remember, yet still haunts my memory. It was November 22nd, 1963.
That's a beautiful story. Okay, I haven't heard that entire story. You just gave me a quick synthesis of it. You know, this is, and I'm sure listeners can tell it, this is in lyrical form. You know, fusing poetry and prose is so enormously difficult. How do you do that? It's a hard question, I know. How do you do that?
Hank, I don't know how to not do it.
Yeah, so my, you think in
my kids form. Used to say to me, Mom, you're going to just start talking in rhyme, mm-hmm. you're going to just start everything. You know, poetry is ubiquitous to me. I see it in everything. I think it.
Yeah.
There's a rhythm mm-hmm. And a rhyme to everything, and I seem to be always looking for that rhythm.
Yeah, I love the way that story unfolded, and you were into it. You looked as if you told it for the first time, but I think you have to be able to ask yourself, how do I tell the story for the first time again and again? Does that make sense? I think you have to be able to do that in order to really create that image. When I was, I was in the fifth grade when JFK was killed, and I remember sitting in the gymnasium, and I remember thinking it was all so surreal, although that wasn't the word that came to mind. But I thought it was really a newsreel that I was watching that Walter Cronkite was sharing with me, and it would all go away. It was sort of a dream. I didn't think that would ever happen in a very real world. And I remember that really making a tremendous impression on me. The images, Life magazine.
The Texas Theater where Oswald was mm-hmm. captured.
Yes.
That was where we went to the movies on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
J.D.
Wow.
Tippett was the officer that was killed. J.D. Tippett, we called him Scarface. He patrolled the juke joint, Austin's Barbecue that we hung out at. Not only was my father involved with President Kennedy, and had I met these mm-hmm, people, mm-hmm. but this was my hometown.
Yeah, sure.
All these places were real.
Yeah. Yeah. And for our younger listeners, we need them to know that Texas was primarily blue in those days.
It was.
You know, and that's kind of strange from, oh, God, yes, yes. This is Hank Rubicek with Jacob Reiner, and you are listening to guest storyteller Kay Moon Winters only. On So What's Your Story, KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. Now, I Love Lucy was the funniest show known to humankind. Your mother looked like Lucille Ball.
Yes, she did.
And she acted like her, too?
Well, if you mean irrepressible, irresistible, and incorrigible, yes.
You told a story about your mom at Telebration. It was a great story, and that's why I wanted to ask you, because she certainly sounded like Lucille Ball then.
Let me tell you this quick. On her 80th birthday, we were in a rock and roll joint, and she's the queen of the hop.
Right.
At some point, she spies me through the crowd around her, and she looks at me, and she goes, Kate Francis, I wish to hell you'd quit telling people how old you are. You know how stupid it makes me look when you're out there telling them you're 50, and I'm out there telling them I'm 60?
Right.
She was incorrigible.
I love it.
That's great.
That's great. Let's find out how young people really are. Jacob, I want to ask you a question. Jacob, it's a tough question, but you're a vet and you're a sensitive guy, and I wanted to get your take on this. What do you think of when you think about the Vietnam era?
Misguided hostility.
Misguided hostility. You clearly thought of that one. I love it. I love it. That's a very good insight.
And
why do you say that?
Because there was a lot of people that weren't for the war, mm-hmm. and I understand that. But they went against the troops. The troops were coming back. The soldiers were coming back, and they were spit on, cussed at. It was misguided.
Yeah, and you're right about that. I have a cousin that was killed in Vietnam. And my perception at the time is a lot different than it was now. And I agree with you. I do. It was very misguided. That's a great insight. Well, the next issue is much easier to navigate because I want you to tell us about the new day and location for the Best Darn Storytelling Group around our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild.
Well, that's an easy one. The Guild will be meeting at their new digs this month on a different Tuesday, the fourth Tuesday of the month, as in this coming Tuesday, 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Printing Museum. It's at 1324 West Clay, near the corner of Waugh and West Clay. Plenty of parking, storytelling, and fun.
Thank you, Jake. And this Tuesday, be there or be very, very square. And check out their new site at www.houstonstorytellers.org. And by the way, I want to hear your ideas for guest tellers, themes, comments about the program. So talk at me at drhank@kpft.org, and I promise to get back to you. Next week, Greg Audell is going to be hosting this wonderful show, and he's going to be kicking off our winter drive. And because we at KPFT cannot do it without you, listener-sponsored, corporate-free, Pacifica Radio 90.1 KPFT, Houston. Okay, I was asking you a little while ago how you go about getting your ideas for poetry, and I think it was real eloquent when you said, I can't do anything else, and I can really understand that. You've got some terrific story ideas, though, and I want you to get out there and tell them. You're going to get to the Storytellers Guild meetings more often,
yes,
right?
Yes,
right.
Yes.
You did a great job at Telebration, and The Moth is another great outlet for you, but you really need to get out there because they are terrific. Now, your next story is called A Father's Intuition, and I get the feeling it fits perfectly right here, right now.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Share it with us.
Most everyone has been touched by a mother's intuition. But what about a father's? Have you ever even heard that expression before, much less a story? Well, here's mine. The year was 1970, and while we were just back from the moon, it was still a time without computers in every home, cell phones in every hand, and terrorists around every corner. Life was slower and simpler. That's not to say science wasn't dazzling us. After all, the whole world knew we'd fulfilled our martyred young president's moon landing decree. My young husband had even been a part of that effort. Yet the wizardry remained outside of our homes and stayed well within the confines of NASA. It certainly didn't intrude into the privacy of our most intimate lives. For instance, babies still came about the old-fashioned way, and nobody knew what the baby would be before it was born. Old wives' tales be damned. So it was for me in that month of May 1970. Nearing my seventh month, my due date and 23rd birthday were fast approaching. My parents had come down from Dallas ostensibly to celebrate my birthday, but in truth to see their 2-year-old granddaughter. When my father suggested a stroll along the Galveston Beach, something we'd loved since my own childhood, I eagerly agreed. My father, Daddy, he was the most influential person in my life, and I was his sugar ball baby. At 6 feet 5 inches, being picked up and perched on his shoulders was pretty near a carnival ride. Besides his height, the most striking thing about him was his look. Did you ever see that famous commercial where the Indian chief was paddling down a river filled with garbage, and a tear fell from his eye? The nobility. That was Daddy. If you didn't see the Cherokee in him, you couldn't miss it in my grandmother Mooney, whom he adored. Besides the cheekbones they shared, she had long black braids, and according to my mama, okay, that old lady was spooky. On this particular beautiful May day, with my father's strong arm around me and my crazy little Irish mother walking along behind us, I was as content in life as I have ever been. Running ahead, my husband and daughter captivated us as they danced in and out of the waves, throwing bread up to the gulls just like we had once done. Suddenly, Daddy's arms tightened around me, and I looked up to see a tear trail down his cheek. What? I'd seen this man cry twice in his life, when his mother died and when his president was killed. Why was he crying on such a happy day? Why? Because this one life was stirring within me. another was ebbing away. And as a tear fell from his eye, I heard my father say, "Take time to smell the roses. Know the oyster makes the pearl, for just yesterday I was but a young man, and you my baby girl." Aware of something profound passing between us, I was startled to feel the baby furiously kicking inside of me, as if to say, "Wait, I'm here too. I want him to know me too. I want to know him." Instinctively, I grabbed for Daddy's strong, soothing hand and said, "Daddy, feel the baby." He reached down and laid his huge hand across the tiny imprint, and I felt grandfather and grandchild connect. His astonished eyes lit up with a fire as he felt that rapid kick, kick, kick. We locked eyes for an instant before he said, "The baby's a boy. He has the most glorious red hair, and I'm going to call him Sundown Moon." Several weeks later, June 8th to be exact, I was teaching Vacation Bible School class at our church, and an abrupt knock at the door sent a shiver through my very pregnant body. With foreboding, I opened the door to find my husband standing before me, his sad eyes filled with tears as I instantly perceived his mission and lashed out at him, pounding on his chest, "He's not dead, not dead. Don't you tell me my daddy's dead." Babies don't listen to doctors, and doctors don't listen to experienced, expectant mothers. And on the morning of August 15th, I called my doctor to tell him I was going to have the baby early. He responded, "Mrs. Winters, no matter how miserable you are, this baby is not coming until the due date of the 27th. Take a couple of aspirin and try to relax." I responded, "Dr. Hart, no matter how many babies you've delivered, you have never had one. I have, and the second one is on its way." He barely made it to the hospital in time for the birth the next morning. Mama didn't. She arrived shortly after, furious that she'd sat on the nest so long and missed the hatching. When my husband wheeled me into the window of the nursery, as was done in those days, she waited anxiously as he held up a card reading, "Boy Winters." He was born in all his refulgent glory at 8:16 on 8:16, with the most glorious red hair anyone had ever seen. The nurses were nuts for him. As they unswaddled him for his grandmother's inspection and his crowning glory became apparent, she literally fell back in my husband's arms in a faint. When she revived, all she could say was, "How did he know, Kay? How did he know?" At his beloved grandmother's funeral in December of 2001, Sundown Moon heard his big sister read a long-ago letter she'd received from their Mimi in the days before his birth. "Dear Kelly, you know Daddy Moon has gone to heaven. He left us with the belief that you are going to have a baby brother with beautiful red hair just like mine, and we're going to call him Sundown Moon. Won't that be wonderful?" It was. It is. And the proof is in a father's intuition.
Beautiful story, Kay. That's a beautiful story. Yeah. Did you have a chance to tell your dad these stories or similar ones?
No. I wrote these after I lost him.
Yeah. I just noticed you were thinking about that.
Oh.
Yeah. You wish you had.
Well,
huh?
Wait, Hank. First of all, I believe that this is what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah.
There's not time here for me to tell you what happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The things that have happened with Daddy since then, beyond this.
I understand. If I could
leave this audience with anything about what I want them to take away from my stories, it's this.
Yeah.
Love relieves all boundaries. Love relieves all boundaries, even those imposed by death. Love relives in memories brought to life by breath. Speak of your lost loved ones. Let them hear your joy and pain, and know their souls are with you forever to remain a part of you in all you do, even unto death. For love relives in memories, brought to life by breath. Tell your stories.
Beautiful. That's a way to validate our lives. It is a way to validate our lives. You are enjoying guest storyteller Kay Moon Winters rendering poignant poetic prose. Only on So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston. Who was the storyteller in your home growing up?
Daddy.
Daddy was your age. Yeah, I wonder why I'm so surprised with that one.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, what kind of stories did he tell you?
Oh, my God. Well, in the 30s, when Ford was taking over the...
Yeah.
I mean, wait. When Ford was sending the goons to the auto plants, Daddy was a young... just coming up, you know, was elected ombudsman, you know, and the union rep. And he was who the goons were coming to beat up.
Really?
Yes. And and Ann Richards and Dave Richards lived in Dallas when we did. And Daddy was a UAW, international rep for the UAW AFL-CIO, but was an organizer. And, oh, my gosh. I mean, Hank, I got some stories.
Yeah. I have a feeling you do. Well, what kind of projects are you working on now?
Well, I'm trying desperately to get a website up, which, you know, a good person would have had for in the morning for people to come and get these stories and get these poems.
Yep.
I'm doing a Women's History Month event at HCC in March. I'm looking forward to that.
Wonderful.
I'm trying to finish a memoir, The Birthday Girl, Coming of Aging in Ireland, and trying to polish stories to tell.
Well, those don't need a whole lot of polishing, Kay. They don't need a whole lot of polishing. You got some people listening in tonight? Anybody want to shout out? You want
to
tell everybody, hey, here I am.
Aren't I great? Who? I do. I want to. I had a lot of responses from my friends and my family.
Good.
I want to say hello to Rumi.
Yeah.
My Rumi. I want to say hello to the Pratts in Port Aransas. They figured out a way to hear the program online live.
Wow.
They called to say they had done something magic.
Wow.
And my kids, I don't think my grandson's listening, but I think my grandson-in-law, James, is.
Yeah.
Because he asked questions about.
Yeah. Does he want my autograph?
No? I'll get it.
Right.
I'll get it for him.
He probably wants Jacob's autograph. Yes. He's much better looking. But listen, you got all these people, right?
Yes.
And I'm going to have a favor to ask you. I got a favor to ask you. If you can contact them and let them know that we need their help, because the KPFT Winter Fun Drive starts next week with Greg. So call during the show at 713-526-5738 or get jump started by going online to kpft.org and then to donations, form of payment, and scroll to So What's Your Story as the program that you designate to receive your support. We're going to thank you on the air unless you say otherwise, because your stories are great. Thank you, Kay Moon Winters, for showing us that a father might be his son's first hero, but he's his daughter's first love.
Forever.
You know, stories from, absolutely, stories from another era deserves a great song from the same. One that speaks to us now, I think. Call me a sap, but this is Tommy James and the Shondells from 1969, Sweet Cherry Wine. Scooter is next with the inner side to complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, tuning in for the night, or just chilling out, join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story and ease into the weekend right. You keep loving a great story, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. I'm Dr. Hank, reminding you that on any given day, it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace. Yesterday, my friends are marching out to war.
Art by Trade presents a community event called It's a Wrap. People of all ages are welcome to attend Thursday, February 18th. The location is at the Rosenberg Civic Center, 3825 Texas 36 in Rosenberg. The event starts at 5:30 p.m. and ends at 8. Art by Trade is a nonprofit organization. Funds raised from ticket sales will support programs for local artists. The event will also fund programs that create an art culture for the community. This is 90.1 Pacifica Radio. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at KPFT Houston.